Good afternoon, Your Honors.
Good afternoon.
May it please the Court. My name is Jason Scott, and I represent the appellant in this case, Wendy Jones. Wendy is the mother of Teron, Tiana, and Tenaria. Wendy has appealed the juvenile court's order terminating her parental rights to these three children because she does not believe the evidence supports that the termination is in her children's best interest, nor does she believe that the evidence supports terminating under provisions 1, 2, or 6 of the Nebraska revised statutes. What I want to focus today on is the best interest, because I think that's kind of the primary issue in this case. And I know this court sees a lot of juvenile cases, and I think what you see in a lot of those juvenile court cases is when the kids are out of the home and the parent is in jail, it almost always leads to a termination. And that may be appropriate in most of those cases. But each child in each of these cases is different, and each case is different. In this case, I think there are compelling reasons and evidence that show why termination of Ms. Jones' parental rights is not appropriate. And the place I want to start is with the testimony of the therapist that was talked about in the brief, and it's found in pages 285 to 295 of the Bill of Exceptions. And what the therapist said when asked the question, is terminating Ms. Jones' parental rights in the best interest? She didn't say yes. What she said was that continued contact with their mother was important for these children, and that for these children, waiting a year would be the best thing to do before making a final determination as to permanency. Now, that doesn't fit the mold that the juvenile courts a lot see and that this court sees a lot, that, you know, when the kids are out of the home and the mom is incarcerated, you know, that normally leads to termination. But what the therapist, I believe, was essentially saying here was, let the mother get back on her feet. And she's scheduled, at the time of the formal hearing, she was scheduled to be released in August of 2009. See how things go for the next year or so, and maybe she can turn it around, and maybe she can't. But at that time, these children will be more mature and better able to handle a determination one way or another. Now, this isn't the usual testimony that you see from a therapist in these kinds of cases. And I would suggest the reasons for that are a couple. The first is the age of these kids. These kids, at the time of the formal hearing, were 11. The two oldest were twins. Teron and Teon are twins. They were both 11, and Tenaria was 4. Up until they were removed from their mother's care, she had been the sole provider for them. They had clearly developed and established a bond with their mother. And that bond just doesn't go away over a few days or a few months. And that's really what I think the therapist was saying, is that I've met with these kids, they're bonded to their mother, terminating her rights and just severing all ties is not in their best interest.
But didn't the therapist say she couldn't say whether contact with the mother would be beneficial to the children? She wouldn't express an opinion on that. Am I recalling her testimony correctly?
I believe that her direct quote from the testimony was that continued contact with their mother was important. And that's my recollection of what the record shows. You know, she kind of went back and forth because I know the state may have been trying to get her to say the magic words, but they never really came out of her mouth. And I think that's telling as well, is that she didn't just say yes. You know, this is in their best interest. That was never said. There's some, you know, back and forth. And I think when
would you agree it wasn't said one way or the other?
I would agree with that, Your Honor. Yes, and I think that goes to the fact that the state hasn't met the burden of clear and convincing. I think when it's a little of this and a little of that, you know, that's not clear and convincing, and the state hasn't met the burden in that regard.
We do have the caseworker's testimony about best interests.
That is in there as well, Your Honor. But I think that should be, you know, this court can decide how much weight to give that as well. The caseworkers have very limited contact with the children and their mother together. And so although that testimony is there, I don't know that that's conclusive.
And the counselor had never met with the mother either.
That's correct.
So she hadn't observed anything between mom and the children?
I don't believe there's any evidence of that in the record. And I think with regard, in addition to best interests, I think that the other issues regarding abandonment and neglect kind of fit, you know, within the same kind of analysis. You know, just because mom is incarcerated, that doesn't mean she necessarily abandoned her children. Just because mom is incarcerated, it doesn't necessarily mean that she has neglected her children or failed to provide necessary care under subsection 2. And as counsel was previously talking about, you know, the case law talks about that incarceration alone is not enough. You have to look at other factors. And I think when you look at the other factors here, the nature of the crime committed, it was shoplifting. I think in a lot of the cases that you see termination upheld on appeal, you have violent crimes, you know, assault, sexual abuse, those kinds of things. I would submit that shoplifting is in a different category. And the case law in Josiah T. also talks about the person against who the crime was perpetrated. I think when you look at the case law where terminations are upheld, again, there's a lot of, you know, the abuse was against either the child or a sibling or a parent. But here, you know, this was shoplifting. The kids weren't a part of that. Certainly it's a crime, and certainly she, you know, had to pay the price for that. But I think at the end of the day, I don't know that that gets to the level of what's required under subsection 1 or subsection 2. Finally, I would just touch on rehabilitation. I believe the evidence shows that while Ms. Jones was incarcerated, she didn't receive a whole lot of assistance from the department in setting up services. And most of that was because of her incarceration, so the department isn't necessarily to blame for that. There's also some evidence in the record that she attempted to attend counseling while in York with the therapist there, but there was some miscommunication back and forth. I would submit that she hasn't really had a reasonable opportunity to comply with a court-ordered plan as required under subsection 6. And again, I think that fits with the therapist's recommendation. Let's wait a year. Let's see what mom does in a year. You know, maybe she gets back on her feet. Maybe she doesn't. But in any event, it's in the children's best interest to wait until that time to make that final determination. Unless there are other questions, I guess I would reserve the remainder of my time.
Any questions? We have no questions at this time.
Thank you.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
May it please the court and counsel, my name is Shelley Savada, and I'm a deputy county attorney with the Lancaster County Attorney's Office, and we represent the appellee, State of Nebraska, in this case. As the court is well aware, there were a number of statutory grounds that we alleged, and the lower court, the Juvenile Court of Lancaster County, found that we had met our burden with regard to 4 statutory grounds. As is indicated in the briefs, the appellant has conceded one of those grounds, and that is that these children had been out of home for 15 out of 22 months. Specifically, at the time of the termination trial, they had been out of home for 19 consecutive months. Therefore, that first prong has been proven and basically conceded, so I'd like to focus my argument on the second prong, which is the best interest of these children. At the time of the termination trial, Ms. Jones had been afforded approximately a 3-year period to rehabilitate herself. What did she do in this time frame? All that she did really was establish an ongoing pattern of general instability in her life and noncompliance with court orders. She was ordered to participate in a number of rehabilitative services. The record is full of testimony and exhibits, documents that we offered showing that she did not do that. She was ordered to complete therapeutic services, to establish a safe and stable home environment for her children, to obtain a legal means of support, obtain a GED, a number of things, and none of these were completed at the time of the termination trial. In fact, a year and a half into this case, I filed a second petition, and through her actions, these children were adjudicated a second time. That was based on new and ongoing behavior, specifically chronic criminal behavior, that Ms. Jones was engaging in while she was under the court's jurisdiction and supposed to be rehabilitating herself. I think that's very indicative of what her mindset was and where her priorities were, that she was engaging in these other activities that ultimately resulted in her being placed in prison while she was to be rehabilitating herself. Specifically, the pattern of behavior that she established showed that she did not have the appropriate commitment to these children. At the time of the termination trial, she was placed at the women's prison in York. She was serving 6 sentences resulting from criminal activity that occurred out of 4 different counties, and all of those criminal acts occurred after the juvenile court and the Department of Health and Human Services became involved in her life. These, as Judge Thorson noted in her order terminating parental rights, These activities they were basically escalating behaviors and with correlating escalating sentences or punishments. She would begin with some small fines, then some larger fines, then short periods of incarceration, ultimately resulting then in the longer period of incarceration. And the first time she had been in a prison facility, a state facility, was at the time of the termination. We'd assert that this evidence, and this was outlined in the order terminating rights as well, is paramount to ongoing, continuous, repeated neglect, as well as abandonment of these children. Ms. Jones, clearly as a parent, had the strongest responsibility to these children. She had a responsibility, not even including prior to us becoming involved, but after the first case was adjudicated. She had an absolute responsibility to correct those adjudicated matters as quickly as possible, either have her children remain with her, which they were for a while, or have them reunified at the earliest date possible. She needed to do that by participating in services that she did not do, and she needed to do that by ceasing all criminal activity, which she obviously chose not to do. But even then, once we get further into the case, and she's sentenced to prison in December of 2007, with the first case having been filed in April of 2006, she then had a responsibility to do everything within her power to rehabilitate herself, play by the rules in prison, and get out at the earliest possible date. We offered records from the Department of Corrections, as well as the testimony of Ms. Jones, that that's simply not the case. This trial occurred over the span of four different dates, from the end of February to the very early first week of April. And almost every time we came back and Ms. Jones testified or provided additional information, she had continued to have disciplinary actions against her. They were ongoing. They were occurring during the pendency of the termination trial. She couldn't even follow prison rules while we were in the process of the termination proceedings. She testified, and the documents from the Department of Corrections further supported, that those actions in prison resulted in her not being afforded parole and caused her to stay there longer. I do think that there was one small piece of information, or not small in my opinion, but I think appellant indicated that she was scheduled for release in September of 2009. That may have been a parole date that was upcoming, and she'd already missed some that she said was because of her disciplinary actions, but her actual projected release date at the time of trial is September 2010. So we're looking at a trial in early 2009 and a projected release that was over a year away. I do want to touch briefly on the testimony of the children's therapist. It was a little different than what we normally, I think, see in this situation, and I think that's because of the age of these children and the fact that they had spent a number of years with their mother. The twins were 13 at the time of the termination trial, and the youngest one was 6. But what I remember Ms. Bennett saying, and what my notes indicate, is she said, absolutely, these children and all children need to know where they're going to live, what their future will be, who will be caring for them, and that those caregivers will always be there for them. Clearly, Ms. Jones cannot meet those needs. Ms. Bennett indicated that permanency was extremely important for children in general, and given these children's ages, extremely important for proper development. Now, with regard to the contact, I think that we can continue to twist her words, but if we look at what Ms. Bennett really testified to, and I asked her to clarify in one of the many rounds that we had of questioning her, she clearly said she was not advocating for face-to-face visitation between these children and their mother. That was not her recommendation or her position. She did say that it is in the children's best interest that they have some form of contact with their biological mother or biological family. And I think at one point she said biological mother. We asked what that meant, and she meant the family in general. This was necessary for proper development and so that they would not have any sort of an identity crisis, I think is the phrase that she used. She said that that could occur through sibling contact, because as the record indicates, there's an older sibling in a different foster home. The connection to their biological family could also occur through contact with their grandmother, aunts, other individuals, biological relatives, and also, if necessary, one option could be letters between them and their biological mother. The foster parent testified she had just been doing everything to try to facilitate that kind of ongoing contact, and I think the testimony of Ms. Regeer, the foster parent, really showed a parent that was committed to understanding what these children's needs were as far as knowing where they've come from and knowing their biological family, such that she had written Ms. Jones in prison was one example, asking for a specific recipe that the children indicated they liked, just to try to keep that tie to their past to these children while they were willing to commit to their future. The children at the time of the trial had been placed in this foster home since April of 2008. Almost a two-year period now. This home has indicated they've been very willing to provide permanency for these children. And since these cases were originally filed in April of 2006, these children have only spent a total of 7 months residing in their mother's care and the last time that she saw them was in June of 2008. I think all of that goes to support best interests. And as this court and the Supreme Court has indicated on many, many occasions, children just simply cannot and should not be suspended in foster care nor be made to wait uncertain parental maturity. That's exactly what I think we'd be asking these children to do if we did not affirm the termination in this case. I would assert that Ms. Jones is no better off at the time of the trial than she was in April of 2006 when I filed the first petition. In fact, I think the evidence shows that she was worse off. At least when the cases were first filed, she was living out in the community, had her children in her care. Fast forward to the termination proceedings, and she's in prison and hadn't seen the children in almost a year. She just simply has failed to make any sort of progress towards reunifying with her children and basically continued to thumb her nose at the entire system, at the rules of the community, and the rules of the correctional facility. I don't think it's fair for these children to wait for her to get out, for them to then see if she can ever get stable housing, get stable employment that is of a lawful means, and then put herself in a position to parent these children. Her pattern of behavior shows us that that may never happen, and so it's not in their best interest to wait and see if she can ever do that. As this court and the Supreme Court again have held on a number of occasions, when a parent is unable or unwilling to rehabilitate themselves within a reasonable time, the best interest of the children requires termination of parental rights. That is exactly what we're asking that the court do, is find that the termination that was entered in this case is in these children's best interest, that they be allowed and afforded the permanency and stability that they deserve, and that the court affirm the termination of parental rights that was entered by the Lancaster County Juvenile Court. Any questions?
We have no questions.
Thank you.
Thank you. How much time does Mr. Scott have remaining?
3 minutes. Thank you. Just to follow up, the county attorney talked a little bit about subsection 7, and it is true that the children have been away from their mother's care for 15 months. But as the court's aware, prior cases have held that when you're looking strictly under subsection 7, you've got to take an even closer look at best interests. And in regards to something else she said, you know, I don't think the suggestion is made that these kids, we're asking them that they be held in foster care in perpetuity. I think the testimony of the therapist was that they need another year. They need another year to mature. It's better for them to go through this in another year, and that's what we're asking for. And clearly there's a disagreement between the county attorney and I about the you know, what exactly the therapist said, and ultimately it's up to this court to decide what that evidence shows. But again, I would say the fact that there's a reasonable disagreement on either side, I just don't think that's clear and convincing. And I don't think they've met that burden. Clearly the mother in this case has made mistakes, but as you know, the juvenile court is not designed to punish the mother for her mistakes. The juvenile court is designed to protect the best interests of the children. The evidence in this case, I believe, is that at least at this time, termination of their mother's parental rights is not in their best interest. As a result, I would ask that this court reverse the decision of the juvenile court, which terminated the appellant's parental rights to her three children.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Mr. Scott, Mr. Sabata, you are excused, and the case is submitted, and we are adjourned.
Thank you.